That won't do you any good. You're not going to get away from us this time. Just like that bitch whore, you're going to be our test sample. We'll see just how good this shit is and how quick it travels. She was supposed to be our carrier until you turned up and chilled her. Now you can be the carrier, and we'll monitor you.
Why?
Because we can use this to retain our rightful position in the world. The world as it is now, anyway.
There were other questions Jack wanted to ask, but he couldn't marshal his thoughts, and his throat was too dry and cracked to force out any words at all. He felt the pressure of the bearded man's hand on his arm, and the pricking pain of a needle, the pressure of liquid forced into the vein. And it began to fade. Jack woke to find a similar pressure in his arm. Still halfway between consciousness and unconsciousness, eyes wide open but seeing nothing, he sprang upright, hitting out around him. He felt his wildly flailing arm catch something, or someone.
Fire blast! He's freaking out! Hold him down!
Ryan Carter sprang forward and grabbed Jack, pushing him down onto the bed in the redoubt sickbay.
Got him!
J.B. Dix approached from the other side of the bed and joined the one-eyed man in pinning Lauren to the hard surface. The albino began to choke on a stream of bile that rose into his throat and mouth. Dr. Mildred Wyeth struggled to her feet, aided by Doc Tanner. She had fallen awkwardly after Jack's punch and twisted her ankle.
If you will allow me to play your role for a moment, I would suggest you let me spray that ankle and apply something cold to it before it begins to swell.
If you stop it hurting like hell on a hot day, then you can play King Lear for all I care, you old buzzard.
Mildred seated herself gratefully on a chair. Doc smiled, his perfect white teeth and his gaunt face producing a momentary resemblance to a grinning skull. He hurried to a cupboard to obtain a painkilling spray. Meanwhile, Jack had subsided from his violent fit, the need to vomit taking precedence in his still-clouded mind. JB and Ryan rolled him onto his side and stepped back, allowing him to release the toxin from his body.
What the hell was that all about, Mildred?
I don't know, Ryan, but I sure as hell wish he'd found a quieter way of coming to.
When Jack awoke, seemingly for the third time, the sickbay was in semi-darkness, only one small lamp lighting the room.
I see you've awakened a little more quietly this time, which is something I'm glad for.
Jack blinked, his albino eyes already accustomed to the gloom.
The point is, how are you?
Feel like shit.
Yeah, and you look like it. You've been out for a long time. I thought you'd fallen into some kind of coma. That's why we've been waiting here for some kind of sign from you.
Waiting?
Jack was bewildered. It hadn't occurred to him, but now registered, that he was in a redoubt sickbay.
How?
He couldn't recall a time when Ryan would move his people out of a Mat-Trans chamber and into a redoubt's main body without everyone being triple red and sharp.
Huh?
Where gate?
In the semi-darkness, he could see Mildred's plaits move on her shoulders as she shrugged.
Your guess is as good as mine. I've been taking a look at the computers here and reckon that the Mat-Trans computers at the other base must have had some kind of fail-safe device on them.
Huh?
Still dazed, Jack was finding it hard to take in what she was saying. Mildred came and stood over him.
When we arrived, and it became obvious that you weren't going to come around, Ryan got Doc to stand guard over you in the chamber while the rest of us did a wreck. As soon as we were out, we could see that there was only one chamber in the room, and we already knew that it wasn't as big as the one we'd used when we parted company with the gate. And part company is exactly what we did. It was pretty obvious that whatever happened, we were nowhere where the illuminated ones had gone and nowhere where the gate had ended up. We divided up and searched the redoubt. It's small as they go, and still pretty well equipped. We haven't gone for the upper levels yet, so maybe it's been left alone because you just can't get in and out of it. Whatever, it's empty and safe for now, so we set you up here so I could examine and monitor you. Speaking of which...
Mildred began to test Jack's reflexes and check his vital signs. The albino was silent while she carried out her tasks, waiting until she'd finished before speaking.
On our own?
Seems like the Illuminated One's computers had an automatic reset to send the contents of the Mat-Trans to a random redoubt unless it was operated manually. We're here. God alone knows where the Gate Tribe is, and the Illuminated Ones are safely wherever the hell they were headed, which is just the way they wanted it.
And me?
That's a good question. You know as well as any of us that you always take a while to come around from the strain of a jump. But this time it seems that you went into some kind of deep trance, almost like a coma. You were completely unresponsive, and there was nothing I could do.
How long?
We've been here 4 days.
Know where we are?
Not yet. Not until we try and get out.
Jack closed his eyes. He needed to get his strength back. Every fiber of his body was aching, and as he closed his eyes, he felt waves of sleep wash over him. Sleep that was devoid of dreams, good or bad.
Oh, this is a bastard.
JB surveyed the redoubt's armory. The walls were lined with racks where rifles, machine pistols, lightweight anti-tank blasters, and Grens should have stood. Instead, there were only the remnants of trashed plastic and carbon fiber, the rusting remains of scrap metal. The last scavengers or inhabitants had stripped the armory and then destroyed whatever was either too much to carry or simply surplus. For the armorer, the sight of deliberately destroyed weapons was like sacrilege. His obsession was to keep as much of this old tech as possible in good working order, not just because it was essential to survival in the Deathlands, but also because he could see beauty in the varieties of weaponry, artistry in their manufacture. Ryan Cotter stood by his friend, his single, piercing blue orb taking in the destruction.
Whoever was here last didn't want to give any help to those who came next, that's for sure.
I wonder if they went out above ground or used the Mattrans.
Only one way to find out, JB. If we find the exit level fucked, then we know the answer.
You think we should wreck that first, or bring everyone up?
Doesn't seem to be the remotest chance of things going triple red, but no point in moving them until we find out if we can actually get out this way.
Let's get to it, then.
The two men set off in a guarded posture, playing it safe. But there was nothing, not the slightest indication of life. Despite the stale, dust-laden air, and the lights failing with an even greater regularity, there was nothing that would in any way be an obstacle to the companions leaving the redoubt. When Ryan and JB reached the exit door with the code scratched onto the metal above the keyplate, the one-eyed man turned to his comrade.
Keep watch here, JB. I'll get the others.
Will do.
When he reached the lower levels, Cotter found the rest of his party ready to move. They still adopted an attitude of caution despite the advanced search and moved off in formation. Ryan took the front with Christy bringing up the rear. Behind them came Dean, Mildred, and Jack, who moved with extra caution brought on by a slightly weakened state, then Doc Tanner. At the exit doors, JB was waiting. He greeted them with a curt nod.
Fan out and cover the doors.
The door rose, the metal having buckled slightly in its frame by the land shifts that had occurred around it in the previous century. When the door had lifted 18 inches from the ground, Ryan stopped its ascent to take a quick look outside. No one ever got chilled by being cautious. The redoubt's entry was in a recess cut into the side of a small hill. A dirt track road led away into an expanse of low-level scrub and vegetation with nothing to give the land any kind of definition. From what he could see of the hill they were standing within, it was soil and grass-covered rather than rock. With the way clear, Ryan pushed the lever, allowing the door to continue upward. Moving out cautiously, they checked the surrounding area and confirmed that they'd been hidden within a low hill, similar to others that were scattered around the landscape. The dirt road petered out, and there was no sign of habitation within view. The friends saw no signs of any large predators, as the land was undisturbed, with no real hiding places. There were some tree clusters, but these were stunted. JB, taking a reading with his mini-sextant to try to determine their rough position by the sun, noted that the trees looked like muddy elms.
Mildred, stay back with Jack while we wreck.
Sure thing, Ryan.
Fuck this.
You know it's for everybody's own good, Jack.
Jack hated the feeling of being protected and of not being able to pull his weight within the group, but he also knew that Mildred and Ryan were right. Until he was 100%, he was a risk and possible liability. Resigned to this, he took a look at the area where they'd landed and felt his head swim for a second.
Oh, shit.
What is it, Jack?
It was the area of his nightmare. They traveled for 6 days, with very little happening. On the first night, after JB had taken a sextant reading to confirm his initial estimate, they gathered around a campfire.
Definitely what they used to call New England. I figure that we must be about 100 miles from the coast.
The farther away, the better.
Dean gave Christy a quizzical look.
What is it, Christy?
Piraquati.